latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Destination unknown. Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Let's go. We're back. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll catch up with Rich Hang in a little bit as well. And right now, Steve Haskins standing by here ahead of Pennsylvania Derby Day. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Steve, I don't know if you were listening yesterday. I didn't get a text or an email, so I'm going to guess you might not have been.
I was not actually home yesterday.
All right. Well, then at some point, because you do typically catch up on the archive, you're going to hear a reference.
Yes,
to
when I checked the other day, there was like nothing. There were none up. There was no Monday and Tuesday. I think they just came up yesterday.
They did. Monday there was the file corrupted, so Joe had to get the whole show back from Sirius before she could load it. But there was a invocation of a childhood, probably a childhood staple in the Haskin house.
What might that be?
Ebinger's blackout cake.
Oh, my goodness. What do you mean? Where did you get that? I didn't even know Ebinger's was still making cake.
They're not. I said it was, you know, it was brought up.
Oh, you talked about it. Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes. And I knew, and it occurred to me this morning. I said, if there's anybody that could appreciate the reference to Ebinger's and to that particular cake, it would have been you.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, when I was young, it was Ebinger's, and then they sort of disappeared and were replaced by Entenmann's.
Yes. Yes.
We used to get the Entenmann's coffee cake and the chocolate donuts. But, I mean, Ebinger's was, growing up in Bensonhurst, the early days, that was really, I mean, the only thing you ever bought in a supermarket. I mean, there weren't a lot of supermarkets back then. You know, you had A&P and Bohack,
Gristiti's.
Well, that's in New York City. Gristiti's is way too expensive. We're not going to go into Manhattan for Gristiti's. You had to pay 10 times more than any other place. But, you know, A&P was the big thing, you know, in Brooklyn, and then Bohack, and then came Waldbaum's. Those were the big supermarkets. And Ebinger's, I mean, that was...
They had their own stores too. There were dozens of Ebinger's throughout Brooklyn.
Yeah, there was none near us that I knew of. We always had
Bay Ridge
in the supermarket.
In Bay Ridge.
Okay. Well, Bay Ridge is next to Bensonhurst, but yeah. still a bit of ways. But food was to sort of paraphrase a quote from Burt Lancaster in the movie Atlantic City. Where he said, "You should have seen the Atlantic Ocean in those days." That's what it was growing up. You should have seen supermarkets in those days. You know, I mean, nothing's changed. I mean, the supermarkets, like the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, we used to see what's the difference between the Atlantic Ocean in 1910 and 1980. You know, I mean, obviously there is none, but there's the same thing with the supermarkets. You know, it was something about supermarkets. It was a special occasion. Because, you know, a lot of the neighborhoods in Brooklyn, you had small markets.
Yes.
We had, yep. In fact, where we did all our shopping, it wasn't until I moved to Flatlands that we started doing A&P and mostly Waldbaum's. But the place where we used to buy our food when I was growing up in Bensonhurst, when I was a kid, was Key Food.
Yeah, I worked at Key Food for 6 months.
Of course you did. But they, you know, it was just a small. It wasn't like a big department store where us. It was a small little department store. But that's where we got all our quote supermarket food. But you know, back then, you know, again, growing up in Brooklyn, you didn't worry about getting fresh vegetables. I mean, I never saw a green. Green pea or green asparagus until I was like 28 years old. You know, I mean, if you ever saw the color of peas and asparagus in cans, which is the only vegetables we ever had, it was like this weird warped colored green that looks like, in fact, if you let peas out for like 10 hours, let them sit out for 10 hours, they start changing.
They turn that color. Yeah.
Well, that's the color they are in peas, and they have a totally different taste. And I remember the first time I had fresh peas, it was frozen, and I said, "Wow!" I said, "Those peas, look how green those peas are," and they were sweet. And I said, "Oh my goodness, this is a totally different vegetable." But I mean, if you ever want to eat anything gross, by the way, eat asparagus out of a can. That's what we lived on: peas and carrots, asparagus, and peas. I mean, that was it, you know. So we weren't exactly vegetable connoisseurs growing up. Fresh vegetables.
Here you are. Years later, a vegetarian.
Exactly, a vegetarian. And not only that, by the way, but when you were a little kid, you don't know any better. I thought the vegetables came in cans. That's where they originated from. I didn't even know they originated in the ground or on the, you know, that you had to plant them and grow vegetables. I love it. You just put them in cans. That's all. I don't even know where they came from. You didn't even think about it in those days. You know, we got all our spinach from cans because my mother would mash, would put spinach in. My father loved it. Spinach with mashed potatoes. Mix the spinach into the mashed potatoes.
Interesting. My mother used to make a spinach. She used to make a spinach souffle thing.
Now you see, Steve. I don't know where this was, but in Brooklyn, there was the word souffle did not exist. There was no word. There were no French words in Brooklyn. You know,
my mother started in the Bronx and ended up, you know, in Great Neck. So she must have learned.
Okay, but she probably got the souffle from Great Neck. I don't know about the Bronx, but there was no souffles in Brooklyn. You know, we had our own culture, our own dictionary. I've always told the story. You should have seen me the first time I went into a restaurant for breakfast and ordered a bubble egg, and the look on the waitress's face, like, "What the hell are you talking about? What the hell is a bubble egg?" I grew up on bubble eggs. And then she said, "You mean Sunnyside?" I go, "I don't know. I never heard of Sunnyside. I just know the bubble egg, you know, where the bubble sits up there. That's what we do, bubble eggs." So, you know, we had our own vernacular. we were completely out of touch with the rest of the world. You know,
Did your mother make you egg in the hole?
No, I thought that's, what was that?
It's Italian. It's an Italian thing. Yeah, Italian bread. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Cher made, right? And right, Moonstruck. We should put egg right in the middle of the bread with the
actually, yes. In fact, I was just on the other night. That's egg in the hole.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't. No. The only Italian we got is you know from the charity of our neighbors. You know when they would send us down all kinds of. Meatballs and sausages and veal and
nice.
Stuff.
Well, Steve's as everybody can tell, Steve's childhood was basically a sitcom. Apartment 3G.
Well, it was an apartment upbringing, but it was in a two family house.
Oh, you had a small. Okay, all right.
Yeah, and our landlord upstairs were Italian.
Nice.
I told you the first time their son had a party. He was an artist. He had a party in the basement because that's where his studio was. And I went down there. I was just a little kid, and they were having ham. I'd never tasted ham in my life, and it just blew my mind. I said, "I've never tasted anything so good in my life." I said, "Why can't we have food like this? I mean, our big holidays, we have to starve ourselves to death. We can't even eat." And the Italians, their big holidays, they eat like pigs. They don't stop eating. You know, they eat ham and meatballs and sausages and veal
seven
and
fishes.
Spaghetti and sauce. And I mean, that's their holidays. And then they give, you know, they have Christmas trees and presents and Santa Claus. I said, you know, our big thing here, we spin a dreidel. That's our big excitement.
And fast. That's a great analogy, Steve. Let's shift gears from your idyllic childhood upbringing in
it
Brooklyn.
Idyllic. You know, it was growing up in the 50s. The only negative part about growing up in the 50s was that you did not know at the time you were growing up in the 50s. You were just growing up. You grew up in the 50s in retrospect. You say, "Wow, I grew up in the 50s. It was such a great time, wonderful time to grow up." But when you're growing up, you know, you got the same bully. You want to act like a big shot. You know, I tried to get my hair into one of those, those pompadours, you know, where you with the hairs in front, like the Italians kid had, you know, with their T-shirts and the cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve and the taps on the shoes. I walked around with those aviator caps, you know, with the buckles over there.
Yeah,
you know, all the kids from school, the Italian kids, would look at me and say, "Oh, there's a kid we could pick on." You know, I remember one time, a couple of older kids, you know, picked me. You know, one kid came up and pushed me, where the other kid went behind me and kneeled down, so I fell over him.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And one of the girls over there said, "No, stop picking on the kid." And I was wearing my little aviator hat, you know, with the little air muffs and the buckle on the bottom. And I remember ran home to my mother, and I said, "I'm never wearing this hat again." And I said, "From now on, I'm only wearing stocking caps." I think if you wore a stocking cap, you were more of a big shot. So
this is now radio days meets meets a Christmas Story, because now I'm visualizing you know, looking like one of the kids from Christmas Story, right? With that,
I was like the little brother, you know, with the galoshes and the big coat that I couldn't move on, and you get picked on by Spud Farkas.
Exactly. Spud Farkas is good too. That would be a good cartoon character.
Yeah, actually, he wore one of those crazy hats. But he had the little toady.
He wore a coonskin cap.
What's that?
He wore a coonskin cap.
Yeah, right. Coonskin cap. Right. Of course. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he had his little toady. There was always a little short, tough Italian kid. And you would think that, oh, this kid's easy to pick on. But they were always the toughest kids.
Yes. You should see, this is a memoir. This is the Haskin childhood memoir. That should be the next treatment. Let's get the Haskin treatment.
Who needs the Pennsylvania Derby, right? When you have memories like that.
Incorporate the Pennsylvania Derby into the discussion, because Steve, even without Maxim Security, who sounds like he may have dodged a surgery bullet with that colic episode, we still have got a very good group in here, and a bit of a chess match, I think, when it comes to the pace scenario.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a real shame. I mean, that poor horse has had the worst luck. I mean, the Wests have had terrible luck all year between him and Game Winner. But, you know, he was the star attraction. You know, people were coming out to see Maximum Security. So, you know, as it was with him in there, you had a small field. Now you've only got a 6-horse field, and you've got to sort of digest it and move on. And make the best of what you have. You know, we have three really good horses. One, you know, potential interesting horse in there. Probably, you know, obviously, one horse that doesn't belong at all. But it's just a shame when you lose a horse like that, because he's a horse. A lot of people from Jersey were going to come out and see him. That's their horse. You know, coming off the Haskell. You know, doesn't run into Travers. Points for here. Winds up missing this race after being entered in the race. That makes it even worse. So, yeah, if this had happened earlier, you know, we might have gotten some more horses in there, some interesting horses. But the way the race turns out right now, like you said, it's definitely going to be a chess match. And I don't know, you know, as far as the pace, I don't know who's going to go to the front in here. I mean, Spunter Run's got some, you know, some early speed. They could actually even send Improbable if they wanted to, because he was right on the pace coming back in the Shared Belief, and I would think that he would probably be a slight favorite in this race, only because it's Baffert, who, you know, keeps winning this race now every year, and the fact that he was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby, as lukewarm as that might be, you know, and great things were expected of him early in the year. So now the thing is, it's second race blinkers on. Baffert put the blinkers on in Shared Belief. Hadn't run since the Preakness, and he ran a very, very strong race. Got by far the highest buyer figure. He got a 104 buyer in there. Now Baffert had done that once before. After he got beaten a Rebel, he put blinkers on in the Arkansas Derby, and he got beat again. And then he took them off in the Kentucky Derby. And I think the Kentucky Derby was actually one of his better races he's ever run. Even though he finished fifth and got moved up to fourth, he was only beaten 3 1/4 lengths, and he was running pretty strongly at the end of the race. You know, he was in mid-pack the whole way, you know, and it was a pretty stiff pace, and he was pretty close to the pace, and he ran a very even race. I thought it was a very good performance by him in the Derby. Preakness, he had no excuse. I mean, he was in a perfect position the whole way. I don't know if he suffered any kind of setback, because he didn't run from the Preakness all the way to the Shared Belief from mid-May to, you know, to the end of August. But the way he came back, like I said, second race blinkers on, he's going to be tough in here. He gets Mike Smith back again. So I got to see him as the favorite. And you know, if you watch the Preakness, he actually Smith actually hustled him pretty well out of the gate. He actually asked him was asking him pretty good to get into position. So coming off the race at Del Mar, running a good solid pace of 23:46 and change, being right up on the pace. You know, Baffert, when he sees an opening like this, he takes advantage of it. When he sees there's not much pace and his horse can have the lead, that's where he wants him. I'm sure he's going to tell Mike. He said, look, just break and send him from post two. Because you really don't want to be on the rail at Parks. So I would say just send him and just float him off the rail a little bit. You know, just to, you know, take control and move out a little bit going into the first turn. If somebody wants to lead, let him go for it. I mean, there's not many horses in here who are going to want to lead. Now, the key in here, the key horse, who could, and of course, let's just go to Mr. Money. You know, he's the unknown factor. You know, he's coming off of three brilliant wins, but they've all been in grade three. He actually beaten the 1-2 finishes of the UAE Derby. But, you know, he's really never beaten horses of this caliber. And they were all, you know, he's moving up to grade three. But you can't forget the fact that he did run a pretty solid fourth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year. And I think he just didn't like fairgrounds because he just never picked his feet up for some reason at fairgrounds. He ran so poorly in the recent start that he wound up at 50-1 in the Louisiana Derby. And again, really didn't do much running at all. Just basically ran around the track, in fifth and just stayed there the whole race. But since then, I thought he ran a sensational race. I was really shocked. Not only that he won the Pat Day Mile, you know, he beat a really good field. And it was a big field. He was 13 horses in there. It looked like there were some really, really talented horses in there. And he just drew away. 1:35-1 is pretty fast time at Churchill Downs. And he comes back and wins again at Churchill, wins easily. Big Signal Man, who's a pretty nice horse. Then wins the Indiana Derby. You know, that's when he beats a Gray Magician and Math Wizard. And then romps in the West Virginia Derby, you know, and he beat Plus K Parfait in that race and Chess Chief. So again, you know, he's had good trips and he's just developed into a really, really good horse. If he's this good, I don't know. That's what we're going to find out. So he's a fascinating horse in here. He's coming off a sensational workout. He worked at Bullet 5 furlongs in 58-1 at Churchill Downs. In fact, he's coming off of 4 straight Bullet workouts. So I don't know what we're dealing with. I really don't. You know, if he won by 4 or 5 lengths, it wouldn't surprise me. If he gets beat by Improbable or even War of Will, it wouldn't surprise me. The key horse here is War of Will. I mean, that's the horse, you know, you look at his past performances, and, you know, he's a solid third choice here. And he could be, he's a Preakness winner. You know, the Preakness winner is the third choice in the Pennsylvania Derby. You're talking about a potential major overlay in here, you know, because, you know, if he wins at 7-2 or 4-1 or whatever, you're going to say, man, I mean, that, you know, that was pretty enticing. Now, if you look at him, you try and figure him out, because on past performances, you say, I don't know what this horse is going to do. Well, yeah, it might be a little bit more clear cut than that. You know, obviously anybody who remembers him at Fairgrounds, when he won the LeCompte in the recent star, very, very impressively. And then for some reason, he just threw in a total clunker. He broke awkwardly, and he just ran a bizarre race in the Louisiana Derby. But you look at his last 4 races, all right? Listen, he ran super in the Kentucky Derby. He was right there at the quarter pole, got bothered, obviously, by Maximum Security. He very easily could have finished in the money in that race. He just was running well at the time. He got a good trip. He showed he could run in traffic, trying to come through. Yeah, he might have caused a little of that himself, but, you know, he obviously got bothered in that race, so you got to throw that race out. Even though he finished 8th, he was beaten 4.5 lengths. So the Kentucky Derby, I look at as a plus or a total throwout, one or the others. I'm not going to hold that race against him. Then he comes back, and he gets the kind of trip that he likes. I think he's a horse that basically likes to be up only because he's so headstrong that he sometimes he could be his own worst enemy. And, he was in the Preakness, but he was just so much the best in that race. And again, you know, it wasn't the greatest Preakness field. You know, he beat Everfast and Owendale, who were nice horses, but you know, Everfast was 1,000,000 to 1 in that race. So, you know, he won the race. Good time. 154 and 1 is excellent time for the Preakness. So it looks like, all right, he's coming around now. Then he goes in the Belmont Stakes, and you know, Belmont Stakes. I tell you, to me, that is a total throwout race. That race, he ran 4 wide every step of the way, from the first step out of the gate to the stretch. You cannot run 4 wide every step of a mile-and-a-half race at Belmont Park and expect to be around at the finish. He was just – and Gaffalione, if you look at the race, by the way, Tacitus broke outside of him. He had the 9 post. Tacitus had the 10 post. But Ortiz was able to get tuck Tacitus in because, you know, got that long run going into that first turn. He was able to tuck Tacitus in, you know, and then he dropped back if the, you know, didn't have the greatest of breaks. But the thing about War of Will is that he kept him out there. He just kept him. And this is a horse that, you know, he gets headstrong. If you watch him, even in the Jim Dandy, there was no way in the world he should have been gone to the lead in that race. But he's running with he runs with his mouth wide open. So, like I said, he gets headstrong, and he just looks like a horse that, you know, a lot of times Gaffalione cannot control. He certainly couldn't control him in the Jim Dandy. You know, when you see a horse running with his mouth wide open like that, but there was no reason. He was in perfect position going into the backstretch, and all of a sudden he just took off. And next thing you know, he's got a 2-length lead. You can't do that. I mean, there's no way in the world you're going to do that. And he got tired in the race, and credit Mark Cassie for passing the Travers, because he could see what was going on, so he gave him time off. So what's he done since? He worked 47 breezing at Saratoga, bullet workout, worked 59.2 at Saratoga. This is all breezing, 59.2 breezing, bullet workout. Then he worked 59 flat breezing. And it was the fastest work, but they only had 2 workouts, so he doesn't get a bullet there. Probably would have been a bullet workout. And then he worked 47.2 breezing bullet workout at Belmont Park. This horse is razor sharp right now. If he gets the trip, and he can settle, and you know, maybe, you know, Cassie's been working with him. You know, Triple Crown is behind him. You know, he wound up running in all 3 Triple Crown races, which take its toll. But now he had that little freshening between the Jim Dandy and the Pennsylvania Derby. And if he can just sit right off the pace and just tuck in somewhere and just control and just keep his mouth closed a little bit and just not get too headstrong, he's a very talented horse. And on his best day, he could certainly win this race. And if I was betting this race and I'm looking at the tote board and I'm seeing Improbable at 9 to 5, and Mr. Money at 2 to 1 or something like that, and him at 7 to 2, 4 to 1. Yeah, I would be inclined to take a shot on him, knowing what he's capable of doing. So I know Cassie's always raved about him as being a special, special horse, and I respect Cassie's opinion. So, you know, if he is a special horse, he's capable of running a special race anytime, like he did in the Preakness and like he did in his first 2 starts at Fairgrounds this year. So you know he's got the ability. You know, he showed it last year when he as a turf horse. He was a good turf horse as well. So I'm inclined to draw a line through some of his races. Now the thing is, if let's say Improbable doesn't want to go to the lead, you know, if he goes to the lead right from the start and he's able to settle him, I'm okay with that. I would prefer not seeing him on the lead. But if he's on the lead, I'm okay with that, because I know he's got talent, but he's got to relax. He's got to settle him on the lead. Not like the Jim Dandy, where he's trying to strangle him, and the horse dragged him to the lead. You don't want a horse dragging you to the lead. You want to let him get to the lead and relax. So that's the key with him. He's, you know, he drew well in post 4, so Gaffalione will be able to check what's going on inside of him. And see what Mr. Money does on the outside of him, because he obviously has good tactical speed as well. You know, he's also a horse that doesn't want to be on a lead, but he wants to stalk. So you've got basically 3 horses here who want to stalk, the 3 favorites in the race, and so does Spun to Run. And this is a horse that, you know, we really don't know how good he is right now. He's won his last three in a row at Parks. I thought, you know, he ran well enough in the Haskell. You know, he was well beaten third. He finished well behind Maximum Security and Mucho Gusto. But both of those horses would be favored in this race. And then he came back, and I thought he was totally beaten in the Smarty Jones. I mean, I thought Grey Magician had him dead to rights in the stretch. And he came back like a very game horse. And he finished, you know, over four lengths clear of the third horse in there. So, you know, he's getting good right now. Guerrero seems to be a capable trainer. You know, he trains at 20-22%. So there's certainly nothing wrong with that. So he's an interesting horse, and he's improved with the blinkers on. So he's going to be up there. So all four of these horses have the same kind of running style. I mean, they all basically want to be close to the lead. And we'll see what they do with Mathways. They got to take back, you know, they're going to probably take back and then bring them to the outside. Because, again, you don't want to be on the rail at Parks. And then the other horse, Shanghai Superfly, forget about. Just hope he doesn't do anything stupid in the race. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. But it does look like he'll break behind the field, and then you know they'll run away from him. Mr. Money, it's hard not to project that. You know, given the way he's been working, it's hard not to project that he just. You know, just almost falls into position on the front end. Anybody that's been watching those workouts from Churchill, at the very least, you can see the stretch runs. I mean, he's banging out these bullets while not even being asked at all. I mean, he just seems like a
horse. He obviously loved Churchill, let's put it that way. You know, all those works were Churchill, and his two best races. I mean, his two races, Patty Mile and Matt Wynn, he absolutely romped.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those were probably his two best races. Can he be on the lead? Sure. All for those works? And his natural speed? Does he want to be on the lead? Probably not, because he's never been on the lead in his life. You know, he likes to stall.
It was pretty
you know,
close.
In Mount
pretty.
They ran a half of 49.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether he's going to be on a lead coming off of that, I don't know.
Well, I just pulled up because as you were talking and fleshing this out, I did pull up the time form pace projector. And the pace projector, which has already accounted for the scratch of Maximum Security, who obviously would have been on the lead otherwise, the pace projector has Mr. Money in front. Early,
okay.
And then it's got then War of Will, Improbable, Spun to Run, and Math Wizard, and indeed Shanghai Superfly trailing early. So this is the story. You bring the first thing you said when you discussed Improbable should be reiterated, given Baffert's inclination and Mike Smith. And knowing that you know the horses on their outside will not necessarily you know break looking for the lead, it just makes sense that Improbable goes on. You know,
that's what I think. I think he's
yeah. It makes
race.
Sense.
Going to look in this race and said, I don't want Improbable stuck on the rail with War of Will and Mr. Money,
yeah.
And even Spun to Run outside of him,
yep.
And him stuck down on the rail. At Parks, you know, listen, we've seen a lot of good horses come to the Pennsylvania Derby and just not run at all. Now, Baffert's had, you know, he's won, what, three of these or so. He knows how to win. But, again, there have been a lot of good horses that don't like it. And you just, under normal circumstances, you don't want to be on the inside. So knowing Baffert, and nobody can dissect a race better than Baffert, he's going to look at this. He can tell Mike Smith, look, forget about the rail horse, right? He's going to drop out the last. So forget it. So technically, we're going to be on the rail. We have the one post. Or, you know, if we don't break, we're going to get stuck. If we break, just go for it. If nobody wants it. Because none of these horses, unless War of Will is so headstrong that he just wants to lead. And if that's the case, if he wants to lead, then... and go with him and maybe try and get outside of him. But if you do go to the lead, if you outrun everybody in here, then just then you have the choice of easing up off the rail if you want and just floating the others out. So, yeah, they're going to be out maybe in a better part of the track, but so will you. You're not going to get stuck down on some dead rail if that's the way the track is playing, as it does very often.
Well, that's what makes this kind of fun. And even without maximum security, there's plenty of intrigue as to how this thing unfolds. Steve, before we wrap up, too.
Well, let me just say one thing. I don't know. I got to mention the cotillion.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't you give us a quick thought about the cotillion?
Well, the cotillion, by the way, I mean, you want to talk about an amazing race. The cotillion's got, so I have never seen this before in my life. But you realize in the cotillion, there were 7 Oaks winners in this race.
Hmm.
6, and you got the winners of the Kentucky Oaks, the Coaching Club American Oaks, the San Anita Oaks, the Monmouth Oaks, the Indiana Oaks, the Delaware Oaks, and the Fairgrounds Oaks.
Nice, fun.
Plus, you've got horses in here who have won or placed in 13 Grade 1 stakes. This is an amazing field.
Yep.
I mean, it's a absolutely fascinating race. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good horses in here. And it's just to try to sort these horses out, it's going to be pretty wild. You know, we'll find out how, you know, if Loronic runs back to Acorn with Serengeti Empress, if she runs back to her best races, you know, Jaywalk, you just don't know about. You know, on her best day, obviously, she's a terrific filly. You know, Horologist is getting good right now, won the Monmouth Oaks. Larry Jones' filly's won 2 Oaks. You know, I mean, you can't discount Street Band. You know, she actually ran a pretty good race to finish third to Dunbar Road in the Alabama. Before that, she had won the Indiana Oaks and the Fairgrounds Oaks. You know, I mean, she didn't run well in the Kentucky Oaks, but she had a horrible trip at 25-1. Jeltrin won the prep for this race. She sort of lucked into it because the favorite in that race got totally screwed in there. But, you know, she won the prep here, and she wound up winning by almost 8 lengths. And she's a tough-knocking filly, third in the Mother Goose, third in the Acorn. She won the Devona Dale. I mean, she's no slouch. I mean, she really is a tremendous field. It really is.
In a lot of ways, you don't have to. You got several layers of conversation here, and the first and foremost it is simply Serengeti Empress and Guarana, and the potential likelihood, let's say, for them to hook up. I mean, how else does this unfold? I expect that Rosario, who gets back aboard Jaywalk, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they've got
That's the
to,
key. That's the key.
Right?
Serengeti Empress can outrun Guarana, from the rail. It's the same thing with, you know, with Improbable. I mean, you just want to get out there. You just want to break sharp. And Serengeti Empress, I mean, she's got sprinter speed. You know, she's on the lead no matter what distance she runs at. I mean, she's very, very fast filly and a brilliant filly. Now, Jaywalk is the same thing. She wants to be on the lead, and they're going to have to bust out of there. Rosario is going to have to bust her out of there from post 11. You don't want to get hung wide, so she's going to come running from the outside. I don't trust her because, you know, there's no way in the world she should have gotten beat at 1-5 in the Monmouth Oaks, but she did, and then yet she runs brilliantly in the Delaware Oaks and runs off the screen, and before that she runs horribly in the Kentucky Oaks. You know, and then she should never have gotten beaten in the Ashland, and she got beaten that race. Last year, she was totally unbeatable. So I don't know what to expect from her. She's a very fast filly, very talented filly, and they're going to have to bust out of there from the outside. So, and then listen, let's not forget about Bellafina. I mean, Bellafina, you know, the thing I like about her is that, you know, the blinkers are coming off of her. The blinkers are coming on, I mean. And, I don't know how they're going to affect her. I mean, she wore blinkers twice last year, and she won the Sorrento and the Del Mar Debutante with blinkers on. And, you know, I just think coming off the the test stakes. They've been traveling a lot with her. Then he sent her to Churchill and then back, and then he sent her to Saratoga and then back, and then now he sent her to Parks and then back. But, you know, Flavia Pratt's been hot. Again, with the blinkers on, she's not going to be on the lead, although she's got good tactical speed. But I think she could be live sitting right off the pace, coming off that that test stakes where she just basically ran evenly the whole way. But, you know, you can't throw her out either. You know, she was a very, very good filly last year. I mean, this filly is just absolutely overloaded with talent. It really is. I mean, Dunbar Road is the only championship caliber filly who's not in here. And obviously, you know, they're going to keep those two separated. Chad Brown's going to keep them separated until the Breeders' Cup, you know. She'll go in the and the thing is, you know, Dunbar Road, she's going to face older fillies next time. She run against the late in the Spinster Stakes. I mean, that's going to be that could be a very interesting race in its own right. That's the key. I mean, the distaff right now looks like the most intriguing race because, you know, you got Midnight Bisou, a late rematch. You got two stablemates vying for the 3-year-old filly championship. So this staff's going to be a fascinating race this year, and we'll know a lot more after this race.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I you know who's going to get a good trip in here too is this horologist, and it's now four straight wins.
She's getting better.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, so is Serengeti. Serengeti's improved. She keeps improving. If you're a fake,
she's always been good. I mean, she was good last year.
Nah, even in defeat, even with Covfefe beating her, and frankly, you know, that felt like advantage Covfefe, you know, in terms of configuration and distance. Serengeti Empress has the same feel coming into this to some degree as Improbable. I mean, at least in terms of strategy,
it feels like too.
Yeah, it just feels like Errat Ortiz has got the same situation. He's going to break. He's going to come off the rail, establish position out, you know, in the 2-3 path. And if he gets away with anything early in terms of stealing a quarter or more, I think she'll be very tough again.
As long as she doesn't do what she did in the Acorn, if she goes out there in 21-4 and 43-4, which you certainly don't want to see that. And Duke Girl on a credit, she tracked her the whole way and absolutely blew her away in the stretch.
Yeah, you know, that's fine.
Three-year-old fillies running 133-2. So I don't know if we're going to see the Guarana there or the workmanlike Guarana from the coaching club, American Oaks. But Serengeti the Empress, yeah, I think she was terrific last year. She was winning her races last year by 15, 18 lengths. And she's still good. I mean, she's maintaining her form. The thing about Horologist is that Horologist is a totally different filly than she was last year. She couldn't win a race at all. She was doing nothing last year. Now she's won four in a row this year, and she just seems to be getting better with each start. And listen, she's got good early speed as well. She's going to be right near the pace, you know. So it'll be interesting. I mean, for her to beat Jaywalk the way she did in that race, that was pretty impressive. But I agree with you about Serengeti Empress. I mean, she's a very, very talented filly, very fast filly. But it's a question of what she does, and it's a question of what how Jaywalk breaks, because they have to gun her. They have to try for the lead with Jaywalk. She's not gonna go 4 or 5 wide into the first turn and sit back off the pace and win.
Now a mile and a 16th too. Remember that this is a mile and a 16th, not a mile and an eighth.
Right. So they're gonna have to. She has to break sharply. You have to gun her. Now, if she doesn't break sharply and she can't get the lead, then that's going to move Serengeti Empress way up. And the fact that she's coming off, you know, that 7 furlong Test Stakes and the Acorn at both one turn going back to two turns, you know, then we could see, you know, we definitely could see a repeat of the Kentucky Oaks, except that race he broke from way on the outside and went to the lead, and here she'll inherit the lead from the rail. But again, she's got to get off the rail. You don't want to be down there.
Well, in addition, since we've gone this far, Steve, did you happen to glance at the 3-year-old at the Gallant Bob?
Yeah, it's not the greatest field, but I mean it's good, and it raises enough questions because of, you know, horses we just don't know quite how good they are. I mean, the most fascinating horse in here is King Jack. You know, Kerry Hollendorfer, you know, got a horse in here. Gets Joel Rosario, and it's coming off a very strong second to Improbable. But you know, before that, you know, he's only run twice. He was undefeated. He had won at 6 and 7 furlongs. You know, it looks like he's got good early speed. He's by a speed sire in Jimmy Creed. So he's very intriguing. Then you got Doug O'Neill shipping in Landeskog in here, coming off a very sharp 5.5 furlong win, you know, in 103 and 1. This horse has got good early speed. Didn't quite run his race into Woody Stevens, but you know he's won. He won twice at Oaklawn. Won once at Oaklawn. Was a good second to a very fast horse in Nitrous in the Bachelor Stakes. So you know he's a good horse. And then you got the question mark in here, a Bulletin. You know how Bulletin's going to take to the dirt. He's run 5 times on the grass, and he's a very very good grass horse. And obviously, Fletcher feels like there's nothing for him, and he's going to take advantage of his speed. You know, even though because you know he got beat going a mile at Saratoga on the grass, but his best races have been, you know, he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint last year, and he won his first 3 starts going 5 and 5.5 furlongs. So he's got good natural speed. He's been working on the dirt. So it's interesting that Fletcher is now transforming him. Trying to, at least, into a dirt horse. So, I mean, I think those horses are intriguing. You know, the others you just don't know about. I mean, some of them a lot of others aren't really in this class. I thought this horse, Trophy Chaser, early in his career, was going to be something special. With the way he broke his maiden at Gulfstream Park in a slop by almost 16 lengths, and 109 and 2. He looked like he was going to be something really, really special. And then he ran him right into the Champagne off of that. And he really didn't do much. And he's just now just starting to come back. He ran okay. He ran, it was well-beaten second to Improbable in the Street Sense. And then ran well, you know, in the Mucho Macho Man, you know, finished ahead of Code of Honor in that race. And just barely got beat by Mijos. And then he's come back and won an allowance race going 7 furlongs to Gulfstream. You know, in pretty solid time. Didn't beat much in there. But this is a horse who had tremendous potential early in his career, and it looks like he's slowly, you know, getting back into form. So we'll see what happens with him. So, you know, it's not a great field, but there's some potential. Somebody could emerge from here, you know, wind up running a 108 flat or something like that. And, you know, the one thing about the Gallant Bob and about Parse, you never know what's going to come out of here. You know, it's produced some really, really good horses who at the time were semi-unknown. You know, people knew them, but they hadn't really broken out into the big time. And any one of these horses could.
Landeskog and King Jack, you know, when Western-based sprinters come east,
they have a big advantage.
You gotta sit up and take notice. And, you know, they're both coming. They come in with a shared highest last race buyer, 99.
Right.
They're both really
like I said, Jimmy Creed and Munnings. You know, they're speed sires.
Well, and you get that turnback. You get the turnback for King Jack from the mile at Del Mar, and he ran, you know, very quietly, ran very well behind Improbable in the shared belief.
Oh yeah, he did. I mean, he just, you know, he was running, you know, four or five lengths off the pace or so. But the thing I love about his race is that he finished 6 1/4 lengths ahead of the third horse in that race. So, I mean, that's what makes him probable as a race. If he wins his race, obviously you're going to make him probable look even better. Because, like I said, King Jack finished way ahead of everybody else in there. You know, he's run three times. Two of his races, he ran 99 buyers. So, you know he's got speed. So, he's very intriguing. So is Landeskog. Sort of, you know, and listen, Jerry Hollendorf and Doug O'Neill, when they ship horses, you just don't ignore them. Both of them are tremendous trainers when it comes to shipping horses. And both don't mind it. I don't think there's any two trainers in the country that are willing to ship horses cross country as many times as Doug O'Neill and Jerry Hollendorfer do. I mean, look what Jerry Hollendorfer did with Blind Luck. I think she made 9 cross country trips in 1 year.
Yeah, she wasn't exactly a big, strapping, hardy mare.
No, not at all. No.
She was a
little thing over there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then she had to come east to run against Havre de Grace in a lot of those races.
Yeah.
You know, that was a hell of a rivalry. But this, and the thing about Blind Luck is that every time she came east, she won. And then when she went back home, she got beat. But she was always... you know, she had a better record in the East after traveling 3,000 miles to get here. But she was an amazing filly. Like I said, she was just a slight little chestnut filly. But boy, she was tough. And that's Hollendorfer. You know, Hollendorfer ships horses everywhere, and certainly Doug O'Neill does. Doug O'Neill will ship anybody anywhere for any race.
Well, it's a wonderful card, and those three features, those three-year-old features that anchor it. We're looking forward to it. Steve, we'll be down there, and you've already made your Parks trip for the season, right?
Well, I'm not limited to one. Right now, we're day to day because Jones. Herniated disc is really flared up there this week, and she's in a lot of pain, and she's trying to work out of it. She's only got a couple more days, but she's been in agony. She even went for a cortisone shot. It actually got worse afterwards, believe it or not. That didn't help at all. So we're going to play it by ear. If she's feeling up to it, you know, we'll come. I know she wants to come. It's a question of whether she's able to.
All right. Well,
we're going to try.
We'll get in touch with you and see what see how you're doing. I'm sorry to hear that. All right. Well, hope that maybe there's a chance we'll see you.
Yeah.
All right.
Hopefully.
Well, this was great. Steve Askin, everybody, and as Johnny D wrote me, Steve's stand up act. He's taking pointers from Lenny, and there will be. There
I
will
was
be
Lenny
a,
took
a
pointers
debut.
From me, but except Lenny's got an Emmy, you know, so I don't. And he wrote for the Dice Man, so I can't claim anybody who writes for Andrew Dice Clay has got to be a better stand-up act than me. So
you made people laugh today. This was very good. This was a very fun.
Well, it's that Brooklyn upbringing. It'll do it every time.
Exactly.
Tales from Brooklyn.
Natural material. The only thing we didn't get to is. Growing up under the roller coaster at Luna Park.
Classic.
Steve Askin, everybody. Steve, thanks.
See ya.
We'll take a break, maybe the last of the morning, because Rich Eng, going to get, we missed Rich last week, but we'll get Rich in here and see what his thoughts are toward the PA Derby and some of the other three-year-old stuff. I didn't even get to the game winner news with Steve, with his season wrapping up and being sidelined, hopefully back for a 4-year-old year. And we'll see about Omaha Beach. A lot of people, after the announcement about the stud deal, I think a lot of people wondering if Omaha Beach is able to see his way through to a couple more starts before the end of the year. Back after this, Rich Eng.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough. Who you trying to impress, man? Need you for some love? Try to be someone. You're caught up in the past. Show you living fast. You're talking, talking, but he's walking. I can't help but laugh. Try to be someone. Try to be someone.
We're back at the races. Run downstairs with a timely knock on the door. I'm expecting a box from Daly, Ryan Daly, who of course is the official. Well, we can call Daly Silks the official silks and tack supplier of the show. It's the only silk supplier I've used ever in 15 years, and we've got new silks coming. Very excited. Ryan said that the first jacket that we had, it was a satin jacket, which I love the look of the satin jacket. However, the jocks don't like them because when they extend, it's restrictive. It doesn't give like the stretchy, the speed style silks as they're called, and so, and I had not ordered a new jacket in a while, so Ryan said, yeah, you got to switch over. So I said, all right. So I'm anxious to see them, and I don't know the color's just not as vibrant it seems to me on those. They're nylon? They're nylon or they're whatever the fabric is. And so I also got we got blinkers. I needed new blinkers. You have to order blinkers regularly because the barn will trim them. You start out with two sets, and eventually, full cup gets cut back to half cup and then to a cheater, or sometimes, the half cup with the, you know, with the little diamond so that horses can see, a little bit of movement, just enough for them to see out the corner of the, that little hole. So, yeah, I had to order some new blinkers, like 3-4 sets of blinkers. And what else? A couple other tchotchkes. So we'll get them down to Susan Ditter. I haven't had a chance yet. I know Susan's got a starter today at Gulfstream. Haven't had a chance to explain what's gone on down in Florida because Chuck Simon, you probably have seen at the end of the summer, Chuck with the responsibilities with the Horsemen's organization. Chuck had to turn the farm over, the barn over to Susan. And she is starting horses in her name. And, of course, Susan Ditter has had a wonderful career as a exercise rider. And then she was Chuck's assistant these last 10 years. She worked for Kip Elser at Kirkwood, working with the young horses with Kip. And Kip thinks the world of her, too. And so her career officially, kind of underway now since the summer. She started to run some in her name, and now the whole barn is in her name, and we've got Claude Ray. And she actually gets on Claude Ray every day. And so at some point, I got to get Susan on. And she'll tell you a great story. She rode on the West Coast for years and rode for all the big barns and got on a lot of good horses. And she's a top-notch horseman and absolutely delighted to be working with her and having the opportunity to help launch her career. So if you weren't aware, and a lot of you know her name, Susan Ditter, Ditter, and so when you see those horses that Chuck was training, that's what's transpired. And Chuck's now the big guy. He's the man. And there isn't a man behind the man, because when you're Chuck size, there doesn't need to be a man behind the man. There just needs to be Chuck. But he's running, pretty much running things on the Florida horseman side. Very cool. Very happy for Chuck, too. And I'm happy to have Rich Eng standing by. And here he is. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. And, I heard you talking about Susan Ditter, and I could throw in a sidebar. If I'm not mistaken, when I was in my NIRA days working the publicity office, I think Susan actually worked in the office for a little while. She was, in the formative stages of her career, but she was working, in the mornings, all morning for, I do not remember which trainer it was at the time, and then she was doing some work in the publicity office helping out. So I'm pretty sure it's the same Susan Ditter that is now the head trainer. So I wish her lots of luck. And she was very, very nice person to meet back then.
Oh, that's very cool. And I'll ask her. I'm sure it is. I mean, it's because it's a slightly unusual name. It's not like, it's not a name before I met her, I never seen it before. So I'm sure it's got to be the same one. But she's been, she's worked for nothing but outstanding outfits, including, as an exercise rider. So she'll do well. She's got, I think she said, what did she tell me the other day? She's got, I think, 16 horses right now, and she would take on a few more. But she'll do very well because she is really accomplished.
Oh, that's really nice. I wish her the best of luck. And, she trains for your stable, right?
Well, she's got this, the one horse that I'd sent to Chuck earlier out of the June sale, the very big Datalink gelding. He is somehow, even after being gelded, he has continued to grow, and it's frightening. I mean, he's going to be a very big horse. Susan was getting on him anyway, and she loves him. He's going to be a turf miler and beyond. That seems to be what he's tracking toward. We got no timetable with him, but he's a big, beautiful horse, big, beautiful chestnut with all kinds of white markings all over him. So she's She loves him, and we're excited about it. And we named him after Suge, so.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I'm not going to pretend that he's going to turn into the equivalent of Frankel, but he is named Claude Ray.
So, oh, that's great. That's great, yeah. Steve.
Looking forward to it. Rich, good to catch up. And I was watching, we missed you last week. That was my fault. But, it's obviously a little bit of an interim for you between Del Mar and Santa Anita. You get a little bit of a freshening into the fall. But catch us up on what's been going on.
Well, actually, I am handicapping the Los Al meet.
Oh, and, good.
I'm staying busy. And maybe I'm in the minority, Steve, but actually I enjoy the racing at Los Al, even though a lot of the class conditions are lower than you would see at Del Mar or Santa Anita. Still, one thing about horse racing is when they load them up in the gate, somebody's going to win, and sometimes there's two horses that win, depending on a dead heat. But I've enjoyed the meet a lot, and every once in a while when a Bob Baffert shows up, he's almost laser sharp in his focus. I think he's like 5 wins out of 10 starts. He's got at least 2 of them today that are going to be big favorites in the center of the card. And then every once in a while you see a Mike Smith show up, or I know Joe Talamo's been showing up a few times. Even Flavion Pratt's riding a few today at Los Al. So, pretty good when those riders show up. Financially, it's been a good meet too. There's an old saying, you make lemonade out of lemons, but I don't want to call Los Al lemons, but you know what I mean? It's you're trying to, take lower class races sometimes, but you can string together some winners and make some money. So it's been a good meet that way too.
Well, the configuration is unusual. And of course there's no turf racing. So every, all the turf horses get essentially almost a month to freshen up. And so we'll look at Santa Anita, once we get started next week. Mm-hmm. There'll be, I assume you're going to have some very full fields on the turf front. There's been some very good maiden racing as well at Los Al. And we'll see if it translates into contenders for the front runner and the chandelier. But most of those types are going to be coming out of the Del Mar Futurity and the debutante. They inaugurated that new stake race on Sunday, the special, which Mark Glatt won. I'm glad you're glad you're teeing off at Los Al, because I'm happy. We're happy. We always happy to feature. I think the world of what Doc Allred has done.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I look forward to, we'll be down there again for the Starlet and for the Futurity, right after the trip to Arizona, the University of Arizona Symposium. That I think this will be the fourth year out of 5 that I've done that. And I've really, it's come to be sort of the unofficial start of next year for me, Rich. It sort of kicks off, in my mind, it runs from December 1st through Breeders' Cup. That's sort of my calendar these days.
Yeah, I've seen some of your vacation pictures on Facebook, so I know you and Tina are enjoying yourselves too, and make sure your health is good and your eyesight's good, Steve, too. But if I could just talk about Los Al and some of the handicapping, I know some of your listeners, they're spread from coast to coast. Some of them may not participate in the simulcast at the Los Al, but I can give some handicapping tips. It's kind of a hard track to go wire to wire on, and one of the running styles that actually is very effective is the stalker style, and even a wide trip is not that much of a detriment at the Los Al. You see a lot of winners come from out in the middle of the racetrack and just rally late. So if I could give just a little word to the wise, horses that are good finishers are not compromised at Los Al, even though a lot of people think it's a bull ring, but it's actually been widened because when they started the summer meet there, when they replaced Hollywood Park on the schedule.
Well, the action today, give us a couple of ideas.
Well, I'll go for a couple of horses. There's no, I don't think I've got any breakthrough horses, but let's start with the third race. I like the number one horse, Sunset Seven, and that's coming from the David Hoffman's barn. David obviously has trained a lot of great horses throughout his career, and he's kind of got just a few horses, but this one has been in really good form the last four races. Even though the horse ran for 10,000 at Santa Anita, this classification 16,000 at Los Al, it might be actually facing lesser horses rather than better horses, and the Diaz gives him the 7 pounds off. So I thought the number one, Sunset Seven, was a pretty good pick in this race. As far as a horse that I know I'm going to single later on the card, I really like the Bob Baffert horse, the four, Quality Response, in the Phone Chatter. I don't know what kind of long-range plans Bob has for this filly, but she was incredibly impressive breaking her maiden at Del Mar. And if people remember that race or had a chance to see that race, Quality Response went off at 5-1 for Mike Pegram et al. And was kind of ignored on the tote board, Steve. But there was a Baffert horse who was like even money, you know, one of those uncoupled entry type deals. And that horse actually ended up running second, Scarlet Lips, and but was a distant second to a Quality Response. So I don't think this filly surprised the barn. But I'd be real interested to hear what kind of long-term plans Baffert might have for this filly. She is the 6-5 favorite. The main foe, it looks like the one, Paid Informant, 7-5, coming from Richie Baltus, who ran in one of those maiden claiming $150,000. I don't understand why they run a maiden claiming for $150,000. They might as well make it a maiden special, because I don't know how many horsemen claim horses for out of a $150,000 maiden claiming race. But Quality Response is a filly that I think has a very bright future, Steve. Maybe I go for one more horse. That's two horses. Third horse, maybe. Let's go to the eighth race today at Los Al. And the number seven, Saratoga Morning, from Doug O'Neill. Interesting in the fact that it's a most of these horses are running for claiming 16,000, but this horse is protected. So to me, that's an interesting angle that O'Neill found a spot to get this horse protected. Martin Garcia rides for him, but the seven, Saratoga Morning, I think has an excellent shot in race number eight. So those are three horses I'm looking at today.
Nice. I brought up, we didn't mention the sixth, but there was that horse that we talked about Monday with, there were a couple of horses that came up Monday with Doug O'Neill. Dipping in. There it is. I'm looking at the, there we go, in the sixth. Dipping in,
oh, okay.
Going a mile, turf to dirt, and stretching out. Doug, I asked him, and I'm glad you reminded everybody about the Phone Chatter today. 75,000 for the 2-year-old fillies, non-winners of a sweepstakes, and I think there was one. Wasn't there? Was there another Doug? Doug, I talked about two horses. This is always drives me crazy because I'll write down horses, Rich, that we talk about.
Are they on today's card or just coming up?
It might be tomorrow, actually, now that you say that. I'm glad. Yeah, it might be tomorrow that Doug's other. There was another maiden. That there it is, Tarose, tomorrow in the eighth came up with Doug. Anyway, good card and a 9-race card both today and tomorrow at Los Al. So you know, with only a couple of days left out of the meet and the weekend, I didn't look yet at the Saturday action. I was so focused on Philly and Laurel for the weekend, Rich. But speaking of which, you got a Philadelphia, you got a little Pennsylvania Derby thought or two?
Yeah, actually, I do have a thought or two. I'm in a horse racing rotisserie league with a lot bigger names than mine in horse racing. But I'm in the middle of a pack, but I picked up some horses that in our last draft about 10 days ago. And one of the horses, incredibly enough, that had become available was War of Will. So I took a shot at Mark Cassie, and I know the horse had kind of run a couple of poor races in a row, and the Jim Dandy and the Belmont. But, you know, I'm a big fan of Mark Cassie. If he believes this horse is rebounding back to best form, I would like to see, you know, War of Will run a real big race. I know he's got a couple of tough foes with Maximum Security scratched out of the race. Bob Baffert, Ships Improbable, who's going to be a tough nut to crack. And the hot horse, one of the hot horses on the three-year-old trail is Mr. Money. So for Brett Calhoun. So, War of Will is going to be the third choice. But it'll be, to me, Steve, I think the most interesting aspect of the race, even though it's only six, it's going to be a very tactical race because a lot of these horses have similar running styles or either they're like to be on a lead or very close to the lead. And I think there's going to be a lot of cat and mouse involved. So I'll be real interested to see the trips and the strategy that these jockeys take in the Pennsylvania Derby.
Well, it's funny that you zeroed in on that because that's exactly Steve Haskin, and we spent a good 20 minutes on it in the last half hour, last 45 minutes. And that's the part of this with Maximum Security absent, because you knew what he was going to do, especially from the seven hole. He was going to light out for the lead. But without him, that's the question as to what Mike Smith does and what, how everybody responds from Mr. Money looking, all the way down to Improbable, whether War of Will goes. That's the key here is who's going to take control.
Yeah, you know, another thing, if people have a chance to watch the Philadelphia Park simulcast, it is not the easiest track in the world to go wire to wire two turns.
No.
It really isn't. And I see a lot of the local jockeys, for example, Steve, even when they're on the lead, a lot of times they're in the three and the four path. A lot of them like to stay off the rail. So it'll be real interesting to see, how the jockeys position their horses. It's going to be a real mind game that they play with each other out there.
Well, and I want to pull up the Cotillion from a couple of years ago, and there it is. Okay, it was 3 years ago. Yeah, Smith had Songbird. He also won. I forgot about this. He won with Close Hatches too, but. I was curious, and he won with Midnight. How many times has he won this? He won with Midnight Bizou. Jesus, wow. Smith has won three of the last six Cotillions. As an aside, that wasn't my intent to figure that out, but particularly on Songbird, I want to pull up. Some charts. I think of Smith at Parks and what his tendencies have been. Actually, going back, those were not his only three. He won on Jostle for Service and Fox Hill. I completely had forgotten that too in 2000. So he won it in the same colors a couple of times.
They're going to have to rename it the Mike Smith Invitational.
Holy cow!
Up.
Yeah, right. it's funny. Some of my favorites. There's a lot of my favorite fillies have won this race. Fast Cookie, Nick Santagata won it with Fast Cookie.
Oh wow, there's a name.
That's my man, Nick the Stick. Fast Cookie, famous as the Dam of Frosted.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, and more. At that time, she was with she actually you know what, Rich? Fast Cookie's a funny story because she's sort of the filly to be, not the filly to be named later, but she came over in the deal with Godwin when they bought Stoner Side, and she was part of the furniture. she had been part of the Stoner Side Broodmare band at that point, I think, and or she had just gone to the when did Stoner Side? It's got to be after 2001 because Congaree, So I'm curious when Godolphin may have taken over the Stoner side operation, but Frosted, most people will remember Fast Cookie as Frosted's dam, but I loved her as a racehorse.
You know, one of the fillies you mentioned that Mike Smith rode, the Victory Close Hatch, is, if I'm not mistaken, I believe she won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at like 35-1 or something like that. If I got the right race for her, but she was a deep, deep closer. And I remember there was a race in the Breeders' Cup. It was just loaded with speed. And I do not remember who rode her that day in the Breeders' Cup, but she got up at a huge price. So right off the bat, that makes her one of my favorites. I'm glad you mentioned her. Brought back a good memory.
She was second in a Breeders' Cup distaff at the end of her career, that year, at the end of her career. Or as a, was that as a 3-year-old? Was that behind? Who was that behind in 13? Because I can't. It was not. It's somebody else you're thinking of, Rich.
It was definitely a filly, and it was definitely a deep closer. So I apologize if I got my name screwed up.
I'm gonna have at a big price, and in the last few years, well, there was the biggest price in the juvenile fillies lately was that Take Charge Brandy, right? That was the
I'm trying to remember who trained that. That wasn't Wayne Lucas.
That was Lucas. That was
Oh,
Lucas.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, was that like 40-1 or something like that?
she was in that range. She was. That's got to be who you mean. That's got to be who you're thinking of. But I can't remember if she weren't. Huh. All right. Now you got me intrigued, Rich. Anyway, Rich, I appreciate it.
After the show, I'm going to look it up too.
I know. I'm gonna. You're gonna send me to the. You'll send me to my library here of books. Rich, I appreciate it. Good luck today at Los Al and over the weekend. And we'll start to focus in on Santa Anita and the action when we talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Thank you very much. Good luck, everybody, out in Summercastle.
There you go. Rich Eng, and you get Rich's analysis at racedaylasvegas.com. Follow Rich on Twitter, Rich Eng for Pro Pick. And, of course, his monthly piece for America's Best Racing. Looking forward already to seeing Rich out at when we get to Vegas. I understand. I just got a note. The Braves have got a 12 o'clock start, I guess. And so some of you got cut off on the Sirius side because the Braves game is coming. So I'm sorry. You'll have to catch the replay. All right. 3 o'clock. Although maybe the game is still going, so I can't promise. I can't promise that you're going to have HRRN right on time. We'll see about that. So maybe, I don't know, switch over to... There's a few people that have both. The truckers have both. Sirius and XM. Back tomorrow with the big weekend preview, and there's so much. The Laurel action and the Parks action. We'll do it all. And, of course, we got the Lonesome Glory today, 3 o'clock, kicking things off. And, of course, at Belmont yesterday, I didn't give you the Entenmann result with so much bakery talk, but snap decision, just way too good. Holy cow, way too good at 1-2. We'll see what happens today. Good luck if you're playing, everybody. I'll talk to you in the morning. We don't know.